I'm going to say some things some of you might not like, but remember this, you've said some I don't, some of you. Thank God we can still agree and disagree on issues. Maybe our goals might be the same. Usually they are. We have evidently, most of us have different vehicles from which to reach there. But I try to stand by my convictions as best I can, things that I know to be right. And I know that some of you in here have been in the courtroom a lot. I doubt if any of you have been there more than I have. And probably some of you are lawyers, and I'd like to be a lawyer, but I'm no lawyer. I've always wanted to be one. I'm not one. I've had a lot of courtroom experience, probably more than some lawyers. But I'm thinking about, you know, some people that will change their position. And that's the fellow in the courtroom. The judge says, well, guilty or not? And he said, not guilty, Your Honor. So they struck the jury, deliberated for 4 days. The state presented his case, the defense, the arguments. And the fourth day, the man got to the floor and says, I am guilty, Your Honor. And he said, well, you could have saved a lot of time, a lot of hard feelings, been prevented, a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of efforts, if you just told us this thing to start with. Why didn't you tell us on the first day about your being guilty? He said, well, honestly, Your Honor, I was convinced that I was innocent. But after hearing this testimony, I'm convinced now that I am guilty, and I may as well go ahead and plead guilty. And yet we're hearing a lot of things in this country today, and we're changing when we ought not to. Just because maybe it might be popular, maybe it'll get you another customer, maybe it'll get you another contract, maybe it'll get you elected. And I'm not going to change principles that I believe to be right and good, regardless of the embarrassment, the ridicule, and so forth. I think about the more power to you and so forth. I think about the other day I was flying from Chicago over to Pittsburgh in the evening, early morning hours, really, after midnight. And I believe I saw more lightning than I've seen all my life, at least more than 1 year. And I didn't know airplanes could fly through around anything as much as we saw on that occasion. But it didn't bother me too much, but it did remind me of something. It reminded me of the old hen. You talk about chickens, and we, you know, the food they didn't buy at the grill, you know, before, they didn't want to come in, but sure a lot of them came in that second place, and you didn't mention that, Mr. President. But anyhow, this trip reminded me of that hen that got on the nest, and she sat on a live wire, and it shocked a shell out of her, you know? And I think a lot of people ought to be sitting on some live wires, not shocking the shells out of them, but some other things that we could thinking about. No, I am controversial. I don't think I'd get an invitation if I hadn't been. And you are too. Show me someone that's not controversial, and I'll show you someone that's not much worth anything to themselves or their families or the people around about them. And I'll probably be controversial today. If I'm not, you'll probably be disappointed. One thing about it, though, regardless, I'm going to be honest with you as I can. Anytime I'm not honest, it's because I've made an honest mistake, an error. I hope that this meeting today, that in addition to what you've been writing about Lester Maddox and hearing about Lester Maddox, broadcasting about Lester Maddox, just the things that you've heard someone else write or say, or someone else, you've written something else that someone else is about a Lester Maddox. Maybe today this will be something different. Maybe you'll see something that maybe you haven't been writing about. And I hope that it'll be a benefit to you and a benefit to the cause that I represent. You know, I run into a lot of people that walk up and say, well, I didn't vote for you and I didn't support you. Or said, I like what you're doing. And I said, well, don't you feel like a Lone Ranger? A lot of other people didn't vote for me. But you ought to feel good that you're honest enough to walk up and tell a person what you believe, where you stood. Honesty. I said, in fact, if I had believed everything I read in the newspaper and heard broadcast about Lester Maddox, I'd voted for somebody else myself. Something else I'm not going to do today. I'm not going to act like something and I'm not. I think that people ought to be their own selves, you know. I think the worst mistake a person can make is try to act like something that they're not. Maybe a stuffed shirt or a big shot when they're really not a stuffed shirt and they're not a big shot. And I appreciate the few intellectuals we got. I think some of them have been misplaced, but, you know, that's all right, too. But I'm not one of them, not going to be acting like one of them today or ever. Or a real smart person because I'm not real smart. So I act like myself as best I can. And And it usually goes over all right because most people, just little folks, average folks, even when they get the stuffed shirt idea, they recognize, too, that really they're not really stuffed shirts, that we're all just human beings trying to, most of us, contribute what we ever we can. You've heard a lot of things about me, written a lot of things about me. I don't really know whether you know whether I'm what I am or not. I'm not sure about myself sometimes. I'm conservative, I'm liberal, I'm moderate, I'm a little Democrat, a little Republican, a little bit independent, and all the way American. Just as hard as I know how to be. But I'll all be being all the way an American. I want to talk to these few moments today, and I'll probably overtalk, I usually do, but remember this is the first time you ever invited me, and I just think I'll unload best I can this time that I've got here. I want to talk something about what I think the greatest gap in this country today. It's not generation. It's honest in truth. It's not limited to the news media or to the government. It's in other areas, in industry, in education, and in the church, regrettably. An honesty gap, a truth gap. Unless we're willing to do something about that, we're not going to do much about anything that we're doing in this country, about the poverty, about the crime, about government, about wars. And this is what we've got to do if we're going to survive as a free republic and a leader among the nations. You know, now, gentlemen, I'm going to offer some criticism of you, of some of your activities and some of the things, and I think I should, because I believe there's areas in yours, just like in mine, where I make my errors too, and you make some, and I'm not going to be like Agnew. I'm not going to blame it all on news media, but I think a lot of other folks that are guilty of maybe some of the maybe misleading statements and untruths and misrepresentations and the prejudices and biases. I think you'll find it in the White House, and you'll find it in the Congress, and you'll find it in the church, and like I say, in education, you'll find it among business leaders. So it's not all in the news media. You know, I don't like it when they try to pinpoint one segment of our society or one race of our society or one status of our society with all our wrongs, when generally we can all point at our own selves and look inside and see that we're all part of the problem. The only thing I differ with Mr. Agnew, I think he ought to tell it all, not just hit one segment, but he wouldn't dare talk about what's gone wrong so far as I'm concerned in the Supreme Court, or what might be going wrong in the White House, or too much about what might be going wrong in the Congress, because that wouldn't be the political proper thing to do. So he limits it to outside the family. And I think you ought to include the family. If you think people ought to be honest, then you ought to insist upon it in your home, in your church, in your business, in your own place of occupation and activity. You know, there's no other part of our society any more than important. Most of it won't rank with the importance of those in the news media to this country, and how important it is to all of us in every other segment of our society. I like one who said a long time ago, if we had to choose between a government and the press, I'd take the press. You've got two routes to follow, like everybody else. But there's no more power compared to what you've got so far as the routes that you can follow. You can take the route of honesty and integrity and truth and fact. And being human, you won't be able to leave off all the bias and prejudice like no other human. If you can take that route, you can make a lot of things that are wrong, right, in America. Or you can take the route of hypocrisy and untruths and rumors, views, analysis, and opinions, and prejudice, and you can bring America to its knees. There's no other group, no other area or segment of our society that has the power of the news media. And this honesty and truth that I'm talking about, this is something, well, like I promised when I was back campaigning for governor of Georgia, that I'd promote honest and efficiency and morality in government like it hadn't been witnessed in 20th century Georgia, and that I'd promote government of, for, and by the people like it had not been witnessed in 20th century Georgia. So we did involve more people than ever before. We had more black and whites and people, rich, poor, young, old, urban, rural, to visit the governor's office, the governor's mansion in 4 years than the rest of the 20th century combined. We had more penal reform than we'd had in all the history of our state. In our budget increases in education, we exceeded in the higher level of education all the other states, percentage-wise, in the United States during that period. We involved the taxpayers. We involved all of the people. You've heard that it's hard to get elected governor. I don't know how many of you have ever tried it, but it's not really hard. Not in the United States. Of course, they said I couldn't get elected. You know, I used to shake hands with people on the street early, and they walk by, and I walk around, and I hear one of them say, well, it'll be a cold day when that rascal gets elected. And it was. You know, it was 32 degrees. We'd like to froze to death out there on that platform. But, but it wasn't really hard. Not in the United States of America. I believe you can just about get what you want out of it if you want to apply yourself and work for it. I really do. And I think it grows easier every day to be successful because so darn few people are trying, you know? So it makes it a lot easier for those who do. But all I had to do was beat the television stations and the newspapers, the daily newspapers, and the state and national Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, and the city halls and the courthouses and the state houses, and the major banks, the major railroads, the utility companies, and the industry and all of them, and I didn't have too much trouble getting over there. In fact, back in 1966, ladies and gentlemen, you'd be surprised. They ran me out of the state capitol building over there for passing out brochures. And now I can carry anything in there on my back I can load up. And can't nobody stop me. So we did promote these things that we talked about. I wish I had time to tell you all of them. We found in one department there. So we had a billing authority in 1951 set up by the General Assembly, and the governor was chairman of this. They'd been spending tens of millions of dollars over these years, and they'd never had a business meeting in 17 years. Found a man on the payroll, been there 13 years, never had reported for work. A lot of them in Washington doing it right now. Of course, I don't know how many of them you're going to tell on. I found one man at $10,000 a year, and he was work a day or two a month. I mean, he reported a day or two a month. And he's either on a drunk or getting off one. I fired him. He got $500 a month retirement. They got to ask me because he got his retirement. That was arranged before I got there. But after I fired him, he got $500 a month for doing nothing. Before, he was getting $1,000 a month for doing nothing. Still save the taxpayer $500 a month. And what's wrong with that? And I found highway equipment, dollars in education and health, all over the state government, and some of it still going on. Haven't been able to stop all of it. There'll always be some of it being used for personal businesses and in their own homes and so forth, just because I was free to go there and do in administration of governmental affairs, just like in my own private life, of my church life, to be open, let the people see the inside as well as the outside, and the bad as well as the good. I even seen some things this year that really, things that drove me into government, because I just got disgusted with people campaigning on one platform and then living by another. So it never crossed my mind I'd ever be in public office. I was 25 years of age with a wife and two daughters at home, forever each $25 a week. Never crossed my mind I'd be in public office. Just got disgusted with the hypocrites. I can't stand them. Whether they're home in my church, in the news media, or in government, or wherever they might be. They just made me want to throw up, you know, and so I... This year, let me tell you what happened in our own General Assembly. They wanted a salary commission bill passed. So they got up a salary commission bill, and they agreed with some people on a reorganization bill that if they work with each other, this is how most politics work. You pass mine, I'll vote for yours. I don't like it, but I'll vote for it. And so we wind up with government all formed by the politicians all the time instead of by the people, you know. And said, well, this salary bill, we're going to appoint a commission. The bill will pass the House, then it'll pass the Senate, then the governor sign it into law, then we're going to appoint the committee. They'll elect their chairman. Still in a 30-day period now, ladies and gentlemen. All in 30 days do all these things. Study the various states and their wage structures, the federal government's wage structure, local government's wage structure, private enterprise wage structure. Still in 30 days do all these things, come back to the General Assembly and point out this is what all the officials in government ought to get. And they didn't call me in the meetings. The executive, legislative leaders wouldn't call me in, but it leaked out. And I told them. And then they said, well, if you'll go along, instead of you getting $20,000 a year, you get $35,000. We'll get you a $15,000 raise. And this bill would come back into the General Assembly, be dropped into a committee, never debated, and everybody automatically get their salary increase just on the recommendations of the board. The legislation provided that it would be on just the recommendations. And the only way it could be defeated was the General Assembly to vote against it. And so many things like that. I saw them fix it where judges can retire $24,000 if they'll get out of the way now where they can put some more in the position. If they don't, they don't get but $12,000 a year. If they live 15 years on a voluntary retirement, they get $180,000. If they'll sign to get out of the way now so they can take care of some friends, they get $360,000 retirement. So I tell them about these things, and some of them don't like it over there, but I could care less. You know, I guess I'm the most unwanted politician from a political standpoint that ever walked up those steps of that Capitol over there. But what difference does that make? I'm still going to tell on them when I catch them. I don't care who it is. And that's the reason they don't call me in on some of those meetings. And all my problem not with politics. I have some with the press. You've heard. You know, I think a lot of it, though, is because of fixed opinions or maybe what people have heard. Maybe their own prejudice and their own bias and their own unfairness. I think a lot of times people attack maybe for their discrimination and prejudice by someone else is discriminating even more, and their prejudices are even more outspoken. I really believe this. And so I see oftentimes that people in all walks of life, and some of them in the news media, are unable to see hardly any good in a person that they can't control or doesn't surrender to them. And they can't hardly see any wrong in a fellow that they control or follows them. And this is unfair. It's unfair to the public official, it's unfair to the taxpayers, and it's being dishonest with oneself. And it hurts government and hurts people. You know, they all suffer. Nobody gains. I remember one time this year, one publication in Atlanta told over and over, and then it was broadcast over and over, that I opposed remedial reading in an educational program, and I'm the one who got it put in the bill in the Senate after it was taken out. And yet I heard it broadcast and published over and over and over that Lester Maddox opposed remedial reading, a false statement, but it was published and broadcast thousands of times in our state. And here's something I don't particularly like. The average reporter, many of them have been to me in Atlanta and told me that Lester, our governor, here's the article we wrote, but they refused it, and we can't get it in the paper. Or here's what I said that they left out. And if they don't sometimes slant their stories in these fashion, then they don't even get their column in the paper or their news item on TV or radio from some of the top leaders. I'm not talking about the rank and file report. I'm talking about top management now. This has happened over and over and over and again in Atlanta. You know, let's take one for instance. Now, you've heard a lot about the Buckley story. Something new that he framed the story, didn't he? And that's supposed to shock a lot of people. Well, they frame them all the time. He wasn't first. Well, I had a newspaper reporter walk in my office and say, "Governor, what's new today?" I said, "Not a thing, but it shouldn't bother you. You made it up yesterday. Make it up today." You know. Well, now listen, I've been to Washington before. Some of you know about it. I don't know whether all of you know about it. I picketed. Couldn't get in the White House in 65, 66. Couldn't even get in the gate, but I got in there in 67. You know? Well, let me tell you. You read about some drumsticks I brought up here. Not axe handles. Pick handles. Drumsticks. Souvenirs. Pick in pick rick means to select, choose, to pick out. Rick means to pile up to heap or to mass. It tied in with our name, pick rick. So these are popular souvenirs for more reasons than the one you heard. You know? And so many congressmen and senators had asked for them, Capitol office officials and staff, black and white. And so they had asked for a number of them. And I brought a box rather than having mail on my next trip to Washington. And the Capitol police wanted to carry them into the dining room, and I wouldn't let them. Because the manager of the club and others there had asked for them. I said, if they want one, they'll have to go outside and get it. They can't take them in. But you read in the paper and heard it broadcast that I carried a box full of them into the dining room. I read in a Chicago newspaper that I had a box full of them under my table. And they never get it in there. Not one did I carry in. But you heard right the opposite. And it went all over the United States. And that's not fair. Because it's false. It was dishonest. It's untrue. I want to bring something else to your attention. A Jack Anderson column in Parade. And it went all over the United States. I don't know whether Miss Anderson here did or not. I hope so. But I read in Parade magazine that Lester Mattis, while he was governor of Georgia, was seldom ever in the governor's office. That people visited Georgia, they found him out at the governor's mansion rather than in the office playing with his basset hound. And the only time I was ever out there at the governor's mansion was about 17, 18 Sundays a year on Sunday afternoon when I was in town. The rest of the time, I was either in the office or on an assignment, not at the mansion, except at night, maybe 12, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. But all the people all over the United States read that I didn't stay in the governor's office. I stayed at home on the mansion grounds playing with a basset hound. I read something else in that article, just show you how things can get distorted and twisted and misleading people. I read in there that we were opening an I-285 highway. You can get a copy of it now and see it in Atlanta. And that it was a rather dull thing. That's the perimeter highway. And we couldn't get any publicity or attention much to it. And I decided there, and they saw a twinkle in my eye, the idea hit me that I ought to get on the hood of the automobile and ride through the sign and let that maybe attract some attention. And that was planned several weeks before, and they wanted to know if I'd participate in it by the Department of Industry and Trade, the Highway Department, and the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, that I would ride on the hood of that automobile through this barricade and this sign and opening of that highway. And yet it was told all over the United States by Mr. Jack Anderson that it was my idea, a spur-of-the-moment thing, to try to attract attention. And the people deserve it. And they have a right to the truth. Like I said earlier, everybody's guilty of some prejudice and bias. We're human beings, and everybody's guilty. But there's no need of expanding upon opinions and rumors and untruths to mislead and hurt. You know, tyranny's worst enemy is truth, and his best friend is ignorance. You'll know the truth, and the truth will keep you free. Without it, you can't be free. Rich, poor, young, old, black, white, whoever you are. Tyranny in America today, and we have some, it's because people are oftentimes ignorant of the truth. You know, there's publication of the secret Pentagon papers. I think maybe this was a step in the right direction. I really do. If the man was doing that for the purpose of hurting this country, then that was tyranny. But if he was doing it to bring out some facts that the people have been misled and misguided, then it ought to be printed and talked about so the people will know the truth. Of course, right now, I don't know whether his story was the truth, the Pentagon report, or the one we've been hearing. Do you? Maybe there's a third one. You know, but at least what really came out of this was a battle that has been won for the free press, and this is good. Whether it was intended or not, this is good. A battle was won for the free press. And it helped to wake up apathetic Americans. And I think sometime maybe the people in the top government are using the top secret stamp as a politician's Fifth Amendment, maybe not to protect our national security, but to protect some politician's hide. And I'm not going to be specifically critical of the New York Times, but really I think maybe the New York Times had an axe to grind too. You know, I question what would have happened had the story been the opposite, showing that our military leaders had made the right decisions. They had been fair. They had been honest. And they'd called for an all-out victory. And it turned out right. What kind of story? Or would there have been a story at all? You know, I guess few reporters would write that Ted Kennedy is up as a racist or Lester Maddox as being equally fair. But yet, I think the history of our administration proves that there was no difference to people because of their race, creed, color, but we served and worked to serve and worked to help everybody in our state. And this truth and honesty gap that I'm talking about, it stretches from one end of this nation to another. It's about our school situation. We're not told the truth about what's happening in the public schools. We're afraid. But if we tell the truth, maybe we'd help some of the children, the black ones, the white ones, in education and help the country. I think, actually, we've got a police state over public education, and the children are suffering of every race and creed, and the country suffers. That the helpless black and white. The poor ones, they're the victims. Everybody else runs from it and escapes. The affluent. It's not for affluent Americans. It's for those that can't afford it. It's not for the president, vice president, Supreme Court justices, and the congressmen, and their children and grandchildren. It's for the ones that can't get away from some of the, what I call, tyranny in government. And all the discrimination and prejudice and bias, as far as I'm concerned, not all over, not just down south, it's all over this country. You know, I think there's more discrimination and prejudice and bias and disorder and unrest since some of our Supreme Court rulings and actions by Congress, far more violence, disorder, disruptions, far more, many times more than we had prior to these special pieces of legislation and special decisions. Just look before 1954. Look before the Civil Rights Acts of 57, 64, and 65, and look after. And if it's not working, and if it's creating more racial hatred and disgust and disorder, then who's guilty? Government and those who support these policies that are dividing and bringing disunity rather than eliminating this discrimination and bringing peace and better education. You know, there's other areas we're not being told the truth. We're not being told the truth about the revenue sharing program in this country. I don't have time to describe it here at this time, but it's being pictured as one thing through the news media with the information they get from the administration when it will do right the opposite of strengthening City Hall and the courthouse and the State House and cutting back on centralized Washington. Do right the opposite of that. It'll compound the problems in the major metropolitan areas. It'll drive more people from rural America into urban America. More slums, more ghettos, more welfare costs, more crime. And yet it's pictured to us as something right the opposite. It's not truthful. It's not honest to give the cherry side of this thing, the beautiful side of this thing, and not tell the people the whole truth. You know, with this situation, the family assistance program, the truth hasn't been told to the American people about the family assistance program. If old Light Bulb Johnson, somebody proposed one like that, they'd run him out of, Washington, D.C. a long time ago. Look at the administration on housing. He said, well, we're going to defend your right and protect your right, the president did just a few weeks ago, to vote for or against low-rent public housing in your communities, to protect your communities if you want to. That this is your American right, we're going to defend it. And it wasn't 48 hours till the Attorney General filed a suit in St. Louis against some people trying to protect their communities. Double standard. Secretary Romney, what did he say? He said, if you don't vote to accept these things and don't accept them, we're going to starve you. We're going to take your water and sewage money and urban renewal money. A double standard. Dishonesty. Hypocrisy. No wonder a lot of people have lost confidence. They don't know what to believe. They asked me the other day, what do you think about the president's stand on so-and-so? I said, well, you tell me where he stands. If you can find out, then I'll tell you. Look at the president's position on busing, freedom of choice. He's all for it. Says the president should lead the fight, see that it's preserved. Then he sends an HEW and Justice Department to destroy the neighborhood schools and freedom of choice. If he's really sincere, why don't he put on a campaign and lead the fight for a constitutional amendment that will restore freedom of choice for every black and white person, every mama, dad, child in this country. He could lead the fight, but he's really not sincere about his position. No wonder. Look at unemployment. Look at inflation. No wonder he's going to China. Good gracious alive. You can't hardly blame him running off to China. You know, at your election time, they said, well, that fellow went to Spain. They used to tell about that great senator, Dick Russell, you know. Election time come up, you go fishing. You don't take a position. You run. You go to Spain. Well, Nixon's going to Spain. Right this time, they call it Peking. That's his fishing trip. Look, the first deficit balance of trade in our country coming up this year since 1893. And we're in trouble so far as the fiscal position is concerned. Our deficit spending. They say now, you know what you do? And some of you agree with it. That's all right. Thank God we can do these things. They say deficit spending. That's the thing to do. And when you're having a depression, a recession, you're supposed to spend like you're taking it in. Now, suppose you did that in your business. Well, I want a new Cadillac. I don't have no job, but maybe I'll get one. I want a better home. I'm just going to go ahead and buy it, even though I'm not making the money. Maybe I'll get a promotion. Maybe the money will come later. This type of financing is stupid to me. If it's all right to to spend money that you ought to be taking in depression years, and you go in a deficit of $20-25 billion, then in our best years in the history in the 60s, we still went into the deficit, $15-20 million a year. In your good years and your lean years, well, you can't stand up as a free, strong country on this type of financing. You can readily understand why the president would, or anyone else would want to go fishing or maybe go to Spain. Really, I think, well, we've got a leadership crisis. Now, I'm almost through. I know I've been a long time. I've got a few comments I want to read to you here that I've prepared particular. I realize that what I'm saying here today is controversial, but if I were not a controversial person, like I said to you before, you wouldn't want to have invited me maybe to speak. And I appreciate the opportunity to be before you. And I realize, too, that it's rather preemptuous for a relative, unimportant, little old lieutenant governor from the South to come to our nation's capital and take the task. Some of our political leaders and journalists, too. But because I love my God more than life, and because I put my country ahead of personal ambitions, and because I value freedom more than I value friendships, I say what I believe, and I believe what I say. And I found the unmitigated gall to, I do have the unmitigated gall to challenge this prestigious group of scholarly journalists to do a better job telling the American people the truth, even if subscriptions fail to come in, or you fail to get a promotion, or have to change even your job or positions. And I challenge you to butcher every sacred cow to be found on this continent and turn them all into plain old hamburger to be consumed by the average American. I challenge you to look for some of the bad in forced integration and some of the good in freedom of choice. And I challenge you to report the good which smoke belching, river polluting industry has done for America under the private enterprise system, as well as what it has done to America and her once pure but impoverished land. I think it's time we heard a lot more about the good, decent, responsible, and productive young people who constitute a majority of our youth, and a little bit less about the minority of irresponsible, bomb-throwing, pot-smoking kooks who generally hog the attention of the press and the public. And you are the only ones who can effectively do this. It seems to me that the time is overdue for the policeman to get a break, too. Some bum can shout police brutality, and his cry is echoed from coast to coast. But how often do we hear about the brutality against policemen unless the brutality takes the form of cold-blooded murder? And then who really cares? A lot of emphasis has been placed on protecting the rights of the criminals, the deadbeats, the bums, and the anarchists. I think we need to place some more emphasis on protecting the rights, the lives, and the property of law-abiding citizens, the ones who come to their country's aid when they are called, and who work to preserve our American heritage of freedom and opportunity. Give the good people a break, if you will, the productive people. I urge you to look beyond the highly polished official propaganda when you consider the merits of a family assistance plan which would immediately double the number of people in the welfare quagmire and triple the cost. Your power is an awesome one. You have the power to destroy a good, honest, dedicated candidate or public official, or the power to take one that's no good and not dedicated and not able and make him honorable. You have that power. Use it right, with integrity, truth, and honor. You know, and if you would, if you start seeing more when you're publishing and broadcasting, try to see a little bit more of the right as well as the wrong in a person that doesn't always agree with you, or maybe that you don't like. And possibly the ones that you do like, and they do go along. In addition to seeing the things that are right about them, when there's wrong, don't be afraid to say so. Be honest and be truthful. I ask you to forget that what you might have been told about Georgia and the South, and come see for yourselves what an honest, hardworking, and determined people have been able to accomplish in spite of more than a century of regional prejudice and repression by federal bigots. I beg you to examine the real motives of professional agitators who coined the phrase nonviolent as a subtle threat of blackmail, making it clear that if their unreasonable demands are not met, the violent troops stand ready for their call to burn, loot, murder, and intimidate. Prejudice means more than a predetermined attitude toward the black man. Prejudice is ignorance. Ignorance is the absence of truth, and the absence of truth leaves room for the presence of tyranny. You ladies and gentlemen of the news media, more than any other group in the world, more than any other group in the world, can ensure that the United States of America remains a free republic and that our precious Bill of Rights remains more than just a scrap of yellow and paper. It is not enough to demand freedom of the press from your government. You must also demand responsibility of the press from yourselves and your associates. The Bible says, know the truth and it'll make you free, and this I believe. My final request of you is that you do everything within your power to provide the American people with this force to make them and keep them free. Thank you.
And now, questions from the audience.
Thank you, Governor. What are your political plans for 1972? Governor, Senator, or the presidency?
I don't have any political plans for 1972 or 73. That doesn't eliminate me as seeking some public office in the future, but I have no definite plans. I don't play that far ahead, sir.
Do you agree with Vice President Agnew's appraisal and comparison of African leaders with American Negro leaders?
Well, I think we've got a... this may be a little bit too plain. You know, I think we've got some black leaders and some white leaders, too. Out of reason, maybe for proper news coverage or prestige, or it's a proper thing to do, or maybe to get you elected, that have done more wrong to black people and white people in this country for their own personal benefit, a life of hypocrisy. And if the vice president was speaking about those who have used their own race for this purpose, then I totally agree, because you've heard the term nigger a lot, and personally, I don't relate it to a race, but I believe we got more white niggers in this country than colored niggers.
Governor, in your opinion, what is the best United States newspaper, magazine, broadcasting network?
The ones that tell the truth the most.
Will you support George Wallace if he runs for president?
I don't know, sir. I don't know who's going to run on Democratic ticket. I think right now, and Republican ticket too, for sure. Because, you know, LBJ was going to run, and he didn't. And so you don't know that Mr. Nixon's going to run. And the Democrats, they're not fussing and arguing with one another. They say that they're not going to do that. They're going to get after Nixon. And I think this is because they're so much alike, they can't find much difference so far. You know, so far as George Wallace is concerned, I think Governor Wallace would make a mistake running as an independent. I don't ever see in my lifetime, not too many more years, I don't know what might happen after then, I don't ever see a candidate outside the Democratic Party or Republican Party being elected president of the United States. And I believe that Governor Wallace could be far more effective seeking the nomination on one of the other party labels, probably in the Democratic Party. And he would do more for the party, both Democratic and Republican in the country, I believe, than he could seeking it as an independent candidate.
You may have answered the question. As a part Democratic, Republican, independent, American, all the way elected official, who is your candidate for president?
I don't have one, sir.
How many women have policy-making top jobs in Georgia?
Got so many, can't count them. let me say this. I appreciate these ladies being here. You know, in Georgia, well, let me say that we know 50% of the land is controlled by ladies, 80% of the money, 99% of the men. And in Georgia, we've got 105,000 more of them registered to vote. In the nation, 1.5 million more, 2 million more registered to vote. And I love them, friend.
Does that answer the question? Who do you think is the strongest potential candidate for Georgia's Senate seat in 1972, and whom do you support?
Well, I haven't looked the field over.
Oh.
Hey, Congress, I'll make my position known later, Mr. President.
These are related questions. If the Lockheed loan doesn't pass Congress, what will be the effect on Georgia's political leaders? And why should Georgia's largest employer, Lockheed, be spared the penalties for slothful management with public money?
That's a nice one. You know, if Lockheed, the loan does not go through, I don't think it will have any effect upon the political leaders of Georgia. I can't see that it would, because the ones that are working to see if they can save this industry for our state and for our nation would have accounted for themselves. And so they would be, I don't think any of them would be hurt, but the economy of the state would be hurt. But this is not really the important thing. As important as that is in the job, I think our aerospace industry cannot afford to be reduced from its present point. We're not doing the job in our military that we ought to do today. By 1974, if they don't go along with some of President Nixon's proposals, and they're not near strong enough, if the Congress doesn't go along about increasing our spending and our preparedness, America will not be a superpower by the year 1974. And I don't think we can afford to take people out of the aerospace industry and then get in a tight situation, have to call upon them and can't find them because we've got to retrain them and do it all over. I just don't think that. And that's another thing about Lockheed. You know, one thing's wrong with Lockheed. It's a war baby, you might say, created by war, created by government. And it's had to follow a lot of the policies of government. Maybe that's what's wrong. Who to hire, who to promote, how to fire, what to waste, what not to waste, and all these things. And instead of private enterprise really running Lockheed, I think they've been following a lot of the policies of national government. So the national government has contributed to this same problem, not just with Lockheed and many other areas. And I think because of this aerospace need and that we can't afford to move backwards in this field, that the government should see that this largest of our industry in this capacity, that it be maintained, and see that proper management does move in there to do the job, and maybe a little less restrictions by the government, possibly Lockheed could do some better.
Governor, this one comes up at every speaker's luncheon. Do you think President Nixon should dump Agnew as vice president?
Well, I can't figure out, maybe I can, why ain't sending him out on the world tour right now. And then Mr. Connolly moves in with to be number two. And then we decide while Mr. Agnew is gone that we're going to change from playing ping pong to playing footsie in China. And I wouldn't be surprised that there would be a change in the makeup, because it looks rather suspicious to me at this time that the president would make that decision while he's out of the country and send him off on this trip.
Do you approve in principle disobeying the law when you believe the law to be wrong?
No, sir. Let me say this about Nixon dumping Agnew. Maybe Agnew ought to dump Nixon. I don't know. But on this, I say no on this question that you have here.
I suppose you get this one frequently. Why don't you eliminate all those anti-tourist speed traps through Georgia?
Well, for the same reason they don't eliminate them all in Washington, New Jersey, California. You've got your Ludwigses. Every state has them. We've just focused a lot of attention on down there. We did clean up an area, but we're not going to have any better government in Ludwigsy, in Washington, D.C., in Atlanta, Georgia, than what the people to demand. And the people are not demanding quite enough. And this is the problem there in Ludwigsy, Georgia.
Human nature being what it is, how do you get rid of the honesty gap?
I don't think people will even attempt to be honest with themselves and with one another if they're dependent upon their own capacities and abilities as human beings. I think a man's got to recognize his problems, his weaknesses, and that he is nothing but man, and that he needs a force stronger than that. And the only way I know, the only way it's ever been proved to be right, was people to seek God's direction, His way, His wisdom in their lives. Jesus said, you'll know the truth, and truth will make you free. And I don't think you'll ever try to live it, really, unless you seek God's direction in His way in your life. Government can't do it. Government can't save one man. Government can't save the United States. See, we don't have a great country because of great presidents and great governors and great congressmen and great judges. or just because of the Democrats or Republicans. We've got a great, marvelous country because men were born here with faith in God under the private enterprise system, been able to dream and set goals and accept challenges and build and produce. And this is why we've got a great country. And I think this is, God bless America again and again and again and over because people like Benjamin Franklin on occasion in Constitutional Convention that were about to break up, and they said, we may as well go home. They're asking like a bunch of newspaper people, maybe politicians would be the best example, or Baptist deacons, I don't know. And they said, I want this section. Another one said, I want that one. Another one said, no, can't take that one out. I'm going to put it in. They said, well, we just give up. And Benjamin Franklin says, you know, said, gentlemen, it hasn't occurred to you, we didn't hear all this time, we've never even asked the divine light, the giver of light, that he illuminate our thinking. And the longer I've lived, the more I'm convinced that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow can't fall to the ground without his knowledge, how could a nation ever rise? And so they had prayer, and we had the Constitution drawn up. And this was the faith of our forefathers. Publicly and unashamedly, people prayed to God to seek his way and his wisdom. And if we're going to do anything about the honest and truth gap, that's the only course I know we can take.
Thank you, Governor.